If you're listening to this podcast, you must recognize the value of asking questions. At Aramco, our questions help us engineer a better future. How can today's resources fuel our shared tomorrow? How can we deliver energy to a world that can't stop? How can we deliver one of the fuels of the future? How can we sow curiosity to harvest ingenuity? To learn more about how innovation drives us forward, visit aramco.com/poweredbyhow.
Hello and welcome. It's another Books of the Year podcast from your friends here. One friend is Matthew Williams.
Yes, hello.
Is the heating on yet?
The heating is now on. My wife is so happy. Heating's blasting out of the radiators. We managed to hang on, as all reasonable, right-thinking people do, until the clocks went back.
Rubbish.
Yes. And now the house is nice and warm.
Yeah, you could just have put it on about a week ago.
No, I was walking around wearing my thermals and a jumper, which is normal for people in late October.
Well, you are an idiot, in my opinion. But have you had a good week?
Yes, I've had a good week. How's your week?
It's been interesting stuff
really?
Going on.
Yeah,
here
yeah.
and there.
Very quiet. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing really to report. Marcus Zusak and Anthony Horowitz are our writers this week. You'll hear the Q&A from them in just a few moments' time. Then in a few days' time, you'll hear the main conversation with them about their books, Bridge of Clay and The Sentence is Death. Some reaction and stuff. Thanks for getting in touch. You can tweet us at Books of the Year and you can email booksoftheyear@yahoo.com.
Yahoo.
Newly 50, which is obviously not a proper name. Two jumpers, two coats, two pairs of socks. I hope Matt says yes to the heating. I'm freezing in the evenings.
Well, it is yes to the heating now, because obviously we have passed the crucial point. So yes.
Peter Gedge, let's hear it for the boy the heating.
There you go.
Has been on for a couple of weeks, just north of Aberdeen, says Peter.
And I noticed Paula has tweeted to say, I have Economy 7. So everyone laughing at me for saying, yes, well, the heating's on, but that she has Economy 7, which I thought was some throwback to the 80s.
In other news, we've added 1,000 Twitter followers in the last week.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, I don't know. To be honest, my Twitter account has gone up by a whole bunch of people.
Yes, yeah, mine took a little bit of a boost as well. I wonder why that is. I'm going to guess quite a lot of people are expecting a little bit of news from Simon Mayo. That's what I'm.
Are they?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Is there anything you can break for us now exclusively?
Well, last week there was stuff, but this week there isn't anything.
Oh, really? Well, don't tell people that, because they won't follow you. So.
Oh yeah.
There's something coming.
Susan Taylor. Now Simon is doing so many projects. Will the Books of the Year podcast still be happening? Ta-da! This is it.
Oh, right. Okay. I mean, obviously, we need people to subscribe to us on iTunes in order to keep this going.
I got a text from my sister saying she'd been into WH Smith and she could see no stickers.
Really?
In her local one.
We need to name and shame the branches. I went into my local branch and they didn't have the stickers either. Oh, I had a good mind to have a few words.
Anyway, but we have announced, and if you follow us on Twitter, you'll know that we have a page on the WH Smith website with our recent choices, and there are discounts there as well. But anyway, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time before they get their arse in gear and their sticker on the books.
Quite right, or else we will be coming round and having words with the management. Yes, a lot of people interested in whether we're going to do merchandise.
Oh, by the way, just before we did, Dermot's... Dermot O'Leary, who was on just a couple of days ago, Toto the Ninja Cat is £5.24.
Only £5.24.
As one of the discounts. And Beetle the Bard is £16.25.
That's not bad, actually. That's a really big book.
Just mentioning that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Books of the Year merchandise, because when you and I have done pictures in the past, I mean, I'm wearing a grey hoodie, but you're wearing your sort of black top.
It's blue,
and we've
actually.
Had, yeah. And people, and we've had sort of superimposed onto our tops the Books of the Year icon.
Who does that?
The people with access to Photoshop, okay. Who I obviously don't have. And people are asking whether they can buy Books of the Year merchandise. Janet Halliburton, how do we go about winning or donating to whatever for the logo shirt, please?
I think that's a pretty good idea. Any chance of merchandise, which we could sell at astonishing?
Yes. Oh, dear. Oh, well.
Make your own. You could always...
Yes, make your own, then sell it to us.
Because that's what happens on the film show, the Wittertainment film show, because we're not allowed to do merchandise because it's the BBC. Everyone else does them for us. So there are Wittertainment T-shirts and sweatshirts and mugs and everything.
Really?
Yeah, we don't.
And they're making money and you're not?
Sounds wrong.
Race.
On the subject of the Heather Morris show, David Hunt says, just caught up with the Heather Morris Q&A on Books of the Year podcast. I love her book, but I must find a wonky donkey book so I can enjoy the illustrations.
Yes. Joanne also was compelled to buy Heather's book after listening to the podcast, although she talked very fast and had to listen really quickly.
Mrs. S says, a beautiful testament to a horrific part of our history, and Barbara Brewis, a truly disturbing, heartbreaking and amazing book.
And Angie Cusky, rhymes with husky, says, amazing book and brilliant interview with Heather. As for the Q&A with Heather, Matt's hysterics at the at the wonky donkey. We all know the word that I'm brushing over here. I'm not going to say that word, but if you listen to that podcast, you'll know what the word was. Set me off giggling like a loon too. But seriously, this book is a must read. Thank you once again, guys, for the fab podcast.
What's interesting is she's written the rude version of the word and put an asterisk in it.
Yes!
But she hasn't taken out any letter at all, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and Heather's book was Tattooist of Auschwitz, by the way.
Of course.
Not Wonky Donkey.
No.
Simon Cuddy, and obviously the whole point of the podcast is you can get everything. They're all available. You can check our back catalogue. Simon Carty, keep up the good work. It's great listening to you both when I'm travelling around the world. Ben McIntyre has just sold two books on the back of your show.
And we'd like a cut, please, Ben. That'd be nice. Pip Tolster says, this was such a great episode. Great to hear Chris Riddell and Radio Leary. So, I've just forgotten his first
name. That's Dermot.
Dermot O'Leary, well done. Talking about illustrations.
Do you mean the world famous Dermot O'Leary?
Your man off the X Factor.
That guy.
Yeah. I'm enjoying these podcasts with you and Matt Williams.
Whoever that is. Chris Hughes in Manchester. I know from your most recent excellent podcast that Anthony Horowitz will be joining you soon, and I wonder whether it'd be possible for you to ask him a question. I have greatly enjoyed his novels based on established literary creations like James Bond and Sherlock Holmes. Would he like to, or is he planning, to write books revisiting any other characters from the past? I think we'll kind of address
that,
won't
we?
Yes,
yeah.
My...
Go on.
I guess...
yeah, just pluck an idea out of the ether there, Simon. Yeah.
I was just thinking as I was walking in today of C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis, maybe. What did he write again? Oh, I wonder.
He might be going there. Anyway, Chris is still loving the podcasts and passing on the word to everyone who'll listen and even those who don't. Chris, thank you.
Quite right, yeah.
Karina Buck, I downloaded Spotify and Acast, the latter solely for Books of the Year, and I haven't looked back, so thank you. It's business as usual at this end.
Indeed. And Sarah Drinks Too Much says, after 5 minutes listening to the Books of the Year podcast, my 8-year-old offers his considered opinion. It's great to hear Matt Williams again, but these confessions are terrible. Hashtag 5-star review.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's very nice of you to get in touch. Thank you very much indeed. And you can tweet us at Books of the Year. Email booksoftheyear@yahoo.com. Stand by. Our Q&A comes next. Question number one. Anthony, do you want to go first? The last book you really, really enjoyed.
Well, I've just been sent and I've just read a book by John Lanchester called The Wall. It's a bit of a cheat because it's not published until March of next year, but it's a fantastic novel about Britain in a sort of a dystopian future when a wall has been built all of the way around the coast, and it's about people who defend that wall.
Wow, that sounds great. Marcus?
Hard to follow that. I finally got to Into Thin Air by John Krakauer. About that, you know, the tragic Everest mission.
Oh, yeah.
And I just ate it up. And,
it's a fantastic book. I've read it.
It's what happens when you leave it a decade too late to read something and then you just read it pretty much all in one go, and it was amazing.
So, Anthony, a lot of your books will be read to kids. Is there a book that you remember being read to you when you were a child?
No. My mother didn't read books to me, but she did tell me the plots of horror films. So the answer to your question is Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Fly. This is me, age 7, with Mummy telling me all my horror stories.
Superb. Marcus?
Wow.
I'm the same. I don't remember being read to. I don't think my parents ever did. But they did. We just did have hundreds and hundreds of books, and it was just up to us. And I was the 4th of 4 kids too, and I think they'd had enough by then, so it was up to me.
Whose books do you own the most of, Anthony?
That's a tricky question, you know, because how do you count them? I mean, I looked on my shelves. The answer is either Dickens, Trollope or Thackeray, because I've got all of their books left to me by my father. And I think Trollope probably was the most prolific of the three, so that'll be the answer to your question.
Marcus?
Dr. Seuss, no doubt.
Oh, good
and,
man.
Uh, and probably John Irving. And just, although much less John Irving's than Dr. Seuss, but the John Irving ones are a lot longer. And I think I just went through a phase where that was just what I wanted to read, and I love those. Especially, you know, you start on The World According to Garp, and you go, these were just whole madcap, amazing, exhilarating, exhausting novels that you just totally inhabit, and that's what I love.
That's a great book, World According to Garp. I love that one. Sharp-eared listeners will have heard the coffees being delivered.
Yeah, coffees arrived halfway through there.
Which is good. Anthony, how long do you give a book before you... I mean, obviously you would finish most books, but how long would you give it before you say that's it?
I do finish most books, but as a writer for young people, I always say that you shouldn't force yourself to continue reading a book which you're not enjoying. How long do I give myself? It depends on the book. I mean, I can go halfway, even three quarters of the way, and finally decide I've had enough. But by and large, I will try to get to the end.
Mark. Yeah, I'm the same. Try to be disciplined, but I feel like there's the 40-page mark, yeah. 60-page... Well, 40, 60 and 80, and then... By then, you've sort of worked out how hard it's going to be, but I still try to finish.
I tell people it's like 50, but in truth, if you've not got me within 10 pages, then it's not going to happen.
I think James Joyce's Ulysses was about page 8, actually, so...
I always tried to have a 100-page rule because reading The Perfect Storm and finding it quite tough to get into. Then it became a huge sensation, so I went back to it, and it, like, kicked off on page 99.
You know,
so I'd stopped just slightly too early. Reading habits, where and when do you read the most, Anthony?
Where? Crete.
Crete?
When, yes, the island of Crete where I spend the summer. And when, between the months of about June when I arrive and September when I leave.
So you can't read other than during that time?
No, the question was...
Where
do I most read? And that, because I have 4 months away and no telephones and no television and no social gatherings particularly, I can read immersively.
Kitchen table for me in the morning and public transport, but the kitchen table is great because you got kids and dogs and everything going on, and it does remind you in the end of that line in The Catcher in the Rye when Ackley, that really annoying kid, keeps saying to Holden, how's that book you're reading? And he says, well, this sentence I'm on is great. Because he's read it that many times because of all the interruptions. But I kind of like the chaos of that as well, and books are a part of that.
Anthony, you mentioned you were looking at your bookshelf before you came out. Is there any order to that bookshelf? Are they grouped together or is it just higgledy-piggledy?
They're grouped together by author. Therefore, I have complete libraries of Dickens and Thackeray. But then I've bought complete sets as well. My Dickens is a lovely Nonsuch 1946 edition, and it would be sort of crazy to split it up because they're made to be together. That said, my books are, I have about, I guess, 2,000 or 3,000 books in my house, and I would mistrust anybody who sort of, for example, had their books alphabetically on the shelf or by year or whatever. So there is a sort of a higgledy-piggledy-ness to them as well. Funny thing is, I know where every single book is. If you ask me now to go to my house and pull out one book, I could go straight to it.
Wow,
that's impressive. Marcus?
Well, mine are alphabetically collated by year.
Oh, really?
Really? No, of course not. No, I had to throw that in. I think there's an element of, I think even what Anthony's talking about, chaos and control. So in the room where I actually work, they're everywhere and out of order just as they go on the shelf. But then just in the general room in the house where the most books are, they are sort of ordered a bit more, fiction and nonfiction mostly. And you try to get them in alphabetical order, but it never works.
Do you keep your own books, Mark? Because you have your own books in lots and lots of languages. And what do you do with them?
Well, yeah, most of them are just, I don't know, we've moved so many times in the last couple of years that they're just in boxes at the moment. And so they're a bit all over the place too. And I just try to give them away. But what are you going to do with 16 copies of the Finnish version? Because you can't give them to anyone to possibly read them. Exactly. So, but you know, you can't complain about those things because someone will really smack you in the head and you deserve it.
What's the first book you bought with your own money, Anthony?
I can remember it vividly. It was Dr. No. I'd been to see the movie. I was 8 years old or 9 years old, and I was blown away by Sean Connery and Ursula Andress. And so I went out, and with my pocket money, I bought Dr. No.
Quite prophetic.
Well, it certainly was going to influence my life, wasn't it? Yes.
That's brilliant. I'm pretty sure mine was The Magic Finger. And I just remember going in there.
Dahl, is that Roald Dahl?
Yeah. And and just picking. And then at the time, it seemed like quite an effort. And then I looked at it a couple of years ago, and it was just almost like a pamphlet. And I thought, geez, I might not have been as proud of that achievement at the time that I thought.
Is there a book you've ever used to try to impress someone?
Only one. I didn't think books should be used to impress people, guess what I'm reading or guess what I've read. But there was one book, The Caine Mutiny by Herman Woke, Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist. And I used that book to impress Herman Woke, because I went to see him to try and get permission from him to adapt it for television. And my knowledge of the book and my love of the book had to come through in the meeting, and I had to impress upon him that I was going to treat
this
book
in my
very,
bag?
Very carefully and with great love. And he did give me permission, and I'm writing it now.
Brilliant. There you go. So it's a story with a happy ending.
I don't know if I've ever tried to impress anyone, but I may have tried to depress people by giving them my book, and especially family members. But then you get to a situation where you've got to, like, I know my brother hasn't read any of my books, and I kind of love that. And, and people always say, he hasn't read any of your books. And I go, well, I don't go and look at every house he paints. And so impressing, I don't know, I just feel like I love the job. And usually when I give people a book, the first thing I say is, but you don't have to read it. So I've never tried to impress anyone with any kind of reading prowess, because I know I couldn't possibly pull it off.
Is there a book you would love to step inside of where the world that's been created has been so wonderful? Because some people are great at creating worlds, you still would never want to be a part of it.
There is, and I have, is the answer to that one, because the answer is Sherlock Holmes, A Sign of Four, Hound of the Baskervilles, any of them. And I've stepped inside them by writing continuation novels, in the world of Sherlock Holmes, which involves the pleasure of doing those books is living inside there, being a guest at 221B Baker Street in the company of the two greatest friends in literature. So those are the books that I most wanted to enter. But that was true long before I became a writer. When I read those books in my late teens, I wanted to be in that world.
Mm. I think for me, most recently, or in the last decade, probably All the Pretty Horses, Cormac McCarthy, but with the proviso that I could step out of that world anytime I wanted to as well. Because it is it's a bit frightening at times, but just that world just felt so, you could tell how much he loved writing it and being there when he was writing it. And I almost would have loved to be in the room while he was writing it as well. So both, not only the world of the book, but the world of the writer writing that book.
Is there an ending to a book that you'd like to change, Anthony?
Yes, when you asked me this question, I knew the answer immediately. It's Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier, which is a wonderful book. I love it to bits. But for some reason, he imposes an unhappy ending on it. After all the things that the hero and the love interest have been through, the girl have been through, you think they're going to come together, and through a complete fluke, they don't. And I wanted to say to him, actually, I did say to him when I met him, why did you do that? Why couldn't you just let them meet, be happy, and they live happily ever after? I'd rewrite it.
How did that conversation go?
He wasn't too amused.
I loved your book, but the ending is terrible. I just feel like, things do happen for a reason. Choices are made for a reason. I think ask most writers, and I think that's how you write your next book, to atone for the sins of the last one. And so endings of books, I sort of feel like maybe it was just destined to be like that for a reason. And so I think it's better left unthought of.
It's interesting. When I work in TV, I mean, there is always a temptation these days to test your work on an audience, and if they don't like the ending, to rewrite it. So I agree with you. In a sense, all endings are somehow built into the book and you can't really change them. They have a sort of a certainty. But this one, in the case I mentioned, was just so quirky and so sort of, I just couldn't quite get why it had to happen that way.
And Louis was on one of our earlier podcasts. If we'd known, we could have brought that up and see if he's mellowed.
What about the ending?
In his answers. Yeah. Is there a book that you would like to write the sequel to? You've done some of these anyway.
I haven't really done sequels.
Prequels.
Exactly. I mean, Forever and a Day is a prequel to Bond, and Trigger Mortis sort of sits in the middle of the canon. I quite like to possibly go back to Narnia, is a thought. They are actually going to do them now for television, I notice, which is interesting. And I've often thought that for a modern audience, to go back to Narnia with modern kids might be quite interesting, to show them the delights of that world. So that would be tempting. I'm never going to do another continuation novel, so if any publisher's listening, the answer is no. It was just sort of an answer to a question. But that would be interesting to do.
I'm glad your motivation was delight. I think my answer is there's a great Australian, really short novel called Wake in Fright. And it's about this teacher who all he wants to do is get home to the city for his school holiday break, and he just can't ever quite get there. And it's just a descent into this nightmarish country town of a world. And then he ends up back at the school where he's working in the outback. And to write the sequel of that would be his second year of hell. It has a kind of appeal.
Yeah, second year of hell.
But only he could do it.
Brilliant. And finally, is there a book that you wish you'd written for whatever reason?
Broadly speaking, no, because I'm happy with the books that I have written. But if you want me just to give you two titles to think of, one, in deference to our guest, I wouldn't have said no to have written The Book Thief. To write a book that is so defining of a year and of a period would be quite exciting. If not that, the piece of writing that I've always envied the most, curiously, is Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap. It's a play, not a book, but I would adore to write a whodunit on the stage that works as brilliantly as that.
Wow. Thanks, Anthony, for being so nice. it's unusual.
it's, Welcome to England, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. And I think for me, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, Michael Chabon, who that's a guy you just imagine gets up, scratches his backside and walks over to his desk and writes something brilliant without even trying, worrying or anything. But I'm sure that's not how it happens. But there's a line in that book where he talks about an ocean liner coming into New York Harbor, and he describes it as the Rotterdam came into New York Harbor like a mountain wearing a dinner jacket. and you go, I wish I'd written that. You know, and that's a line I wish I'd written in a book I wish I'd written.
So thanks to Marcus and thanks to Anthony. You can hear the full interview and them reading from their books in just a few days' time with the main show. Before we finish, we should say congratulations to the splendid and always brilliant Edith Bowman. Her wonderful soundtracking podcast won the Best Specialist Music Program Award at the Radio Academy Awards last week, beating all the proper radio shows. So big up for the podcast, massive, particularly if it's led by Edith Bowman, who is always great company and incredibly well informed on all these matters.
I mean, you look at the names of guests that she's had on there, like Ron Howard, Armando Iannucci, Paddy Considine. I've listened to that one. I love Paddy Considine. So yeah, absolutely spot on.
Yeah, and Bradley Cooper on a recent one as well, who not only directed Star Is Born, but actually is a great rock star. You know, it's quite clear that he's the real deal in there. So check out Soundtracking with Edith Bowman. And then when we speak again in a few days' time, you'll know what we're talking about. Anyway, thank you very much, Steve, for listening. We'll be back with our full show with Marcus Zusak and Anthony Horowitz in a few days.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.